Lazarus Kane looked up as Joey Wells walked through the bat wings of the Dog Hole Saloon in Fontana. When Joey walked straight to a table across the room and sat down by himself without so much as looking at Lazarus or saying hello, the bandit's leader leaned over to speak to Blackie Jackson.
Blackie, what do you think of Wells? Can he be trusted?
The ex-blacksmith stared at Joey for a moment before answering.
I don't know, boss. He's a strange one, all right. Don't never enter into no conversation with the boys, nor join in with the whores in the back room. I just don't have any clear idea what's going on in his head most of the time.
But let him ask in faith, with no doubting. For he who doubts is like a wave of the sea driven and tossed by the wind. If he is a double-minded man, unstable in all his ways, as a flower in the fields, he will pass away.
Well, what's that mean, boss?
That is from the Epistle of James, Blackie. And it means if Joey is playing both ends against the middle, I'll cut him down like a weed.
You got any reason to suspect he's gonna go against us?
No, but then again, he ain't exactly acted overjoyed to be with us either. I want you to keep a close eye on Wells, Blackie. Let me know if he does anything out of line.
Sure thing, boss. How about I get one of the boys to watch his room at night and make sure he don't leave without saying goodbye or nothing?
That'll be just fine, Blackie.
Lazarus got to his feet and walked over to Joey's table, where he sat eating scrambled eggs and chorizo.
Morning, Joey.
Joey looked up and nodded, but continued to chew his food without speaking. Lazarus pulled out a chair and sat down.
Some of the boys been complaining, Joey. They say you ain't acting very friendly. Matter of fact, they say you've been outright rude.
Joey cut his eyes at Lazarus, the cold deadliness of him making the hair on the back of the preacher's neck stand up. Since his days in the Civil War, Lazarus had never met a man who could make him taste the bitter flavor of fear. That is, until Joey Wells.
Get to the point, Lazarus. I know you don't give a damn what the boys think or say.
I've been kind of wondering myself, Joey. If you're committed to this little enterprise I got planned, or if you're having second thoughts about it.
Lazarus, if and I decide not to go along with you on your plan, I'll pack my gear and leave. I certainly won't hang around here enjoying the delightful company you gathered together in this garden spot of a town.
They do leave something to be desired in a conversation, don't they?
Only if you want to talk about something other than whiskey women or who's killed the most men in their lives. I quit talking to him when the conversation always seemed to get around to who's fastest on the draw.
Oh.
Yeah. I tried to tell the first couple of men who brought it up that it ain't who's fastest that counts. It's who's left on his feet when the smoke clears. Any galoot can practice against tin cans till he's fast as greased lightning. But when you're standing across a man whose eyes tell you he's gonna kill you, and your bowels are turning to liquid and gurgling in your stomach, it do make a difference in your perspective on the matter of gunfighting.
Oh, Joey, I couldn't have said it better myself. Speed with a gun is only one part of winning a duel. The willingness to go ahead, knowing you're gonna take some lead and maybe die, but knowing also you're gonna drop that son of a bitch facing you, is more important than speed.
Joey reached across and poured a couple of fingers of whiskey into his glass. He held up the glass and looked into the liquid, speaking as if to himself.
Hell, facing death is easy, Lazarus. It's facing life that's hard. If you're through asking me questions, I'm gonna go take a walk.
Well, sure, Joey. Go right on ahead. Go anywhere you want.
I wasn't asking your permission, Kane. I was just letting you know.
Lazarus's face turned bright red as Joey sauntered out of the room. Damn, but that man could be infuriatingly smug.
After all this is over, I'll wipe that smart aleck expression off his face for good.
As Joey strolled down the rotting boardwalks of Fontana, he noticed out of the corner of his eye that Blackie Jackson walked out of the bat wings of the Dog Hole just after he did. He decided to turn down a side street and see if the man was following him or if it was just a coincidence that he'd left at the same time. After covering 50 yards, Joey stopped in front of an old storefront that still had a couple of panes of glass in the windows. He stood there, pretending to look inside. and he watched the reflection in the glass. Sure enough, he saw Blackie peek around the corner at the end of the street, evidently interested in just where Joey was going and what he was going to do.
Damn. Kane must be suspicious to have sicked his training dog on me like this. I'm going to have to be careful when I go to meet Pearly. That is, if Kane ever lets it slip when he's planning on having his little party out at Smoke's place. Just won't do to have him dog my steps. So I'll just have to discourage his curiosity a mite.
Joey put his hands in his pockets and continued to stroll the streets, as if he had nothing on his mind other than passing the time of day with a little exercise. Eventually, he came to the livery stable, and he entered it. He walked over to where Red was stabled and took a bucket of oats and poured a generous helping into the bucket hung on a nail in front of his mount. Better let the big stud stock up on some grain, because he was going to need all the stamina he could muster if push came to shove and Joey had to travel fast and far. Grass and hay were okay for general purposes with a horse, but nothing improved their bottom like grain, and plenty of it. Smoke came out on the porch when he heard the sound of the buckboard coming up the road to the cabin. He was surprised and delighted to see the two Mexicans riding with Pearly and Cal. As they climbed down, he walked over and held out his hand.
Compadres, buenos dias.
Señor Smoke, your Spanish has improved since our last meeting.
Well, I haven't had much of an occasion to use it since you and your partner headed south, amigo.
It has been most boring in Chihuahua without you livening up the lives of the occupants of our little town.
I take it you two are the surprise Joey said he'd arranged for me.
See, si. Señor Joey said you might need some help, so we came as fast as the Union Pacific could bring us.
Sally stepped out on the porch and waved.
Hello, men.
Both men bowed and took off their hats.
Buenos dias, Señora Sally.
I figure you've already eaten, but I've got some hot apple pie on the stove, if you're interested.
Al immediately turned and put his hand up against Pearly's chest.
Only if someone will restrain this man whose stomach is larger than the Grand Canyon. Otherwise, there will not be enough left for us to eat.
We'll put Pearly at the end of the line.
I think I should get the first shot at that pie since the doctor told me I need to keep my strength up by eating as much as possible.
As Cal walked rapidly toward the cabin, Smoke smiled.
It seems to me you're pretty spry for someone who's supposed to be recovering from a gunshot wound.
Yeah, Miss Sally's food has done wonders for my healing.
Later on, Al leaned back in his chair and eyed the empty pie tin on the table in front of the cowboys.
That was most wonderful, Señora Sally. I have not had such food in many months.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. Since you're going to be staying a while, I'll cook up some more, just in case you get hungry later.
After the men had eaten, they moved back out onto the porch.
You boys know what we're getting into here?
Both men nodded.
Sí, Pearly told us about the bandito Kane and his plans to attack your rancho.
Are you aware of how much he's got us outnumbered?
Numbers, they do not matter so much, Smoke, as the men who make up the fight.
See, it is what makes a man inside, here.
Luis pointed to his chest.
Not how many guns he has in his hand.
You're right. And with this group, I think Kane may have bitten off more than he can chew.
Pearly, hearing the sound of hoofbeats in the distance, stood up and shaded his eyes with his hand as he peered out over the sugar loaf.
Company coming, Smoke.
Immediately, the men on the porch got out of their chairs and drew guns, wondering if somehow Kane and his men were already coming. But after a moment, Pearly relaxed.
Well, you won't believe this, Smoke. Looks like Lewis Longmont is bringing us more reinforcements.
Sure enough, within minutes, four riders came into view. Lewis Longmont, accompanied by George Hampton, Johnny North, and Monty Carson, rode toward the cabin. They dismounted and tied their horses to the hitching rail nearby and walked up to the porch.
What have we here?
Hello, Smoke, boys.
What's going on, Lewis?
After talking with Pearly and Alan Luis, I got to thinking that perhaps you might have need of some more firepower, Smoke. So I spoke to Monty, and then we rode out to North's place to see if he'd be willing to take a hand in this little poker game. As you can see, you now have a few more guns available when Kane decides to make his move.
Sally! You better put another pot on the stove. It seems there are some more men here who have more loyalty than brains.
How do you want to play this, Smoke? You think it'd be better to set up an ambush here at the Sugarloaf or plan on making our play somewhere else?
Smoke glanced around at the terrain surrounding the cabin, slowly shaking his head.
If at all possible, Johnny, if we have enough time, I don't think we ought to let them get this far. The area around the cabin is too difficult to defend. Too many trees and boulders that would give the attackers cover.
Monte Carson nodded in agreement.
You're right, Smoke. If they get this far, I don't know if eight of us, nine counting Joey, could stand them off without taking a chance of losing the cabin to fire or dynamite.
Our best chance, when faced with as many men as Kane has riding for him, is to set up an ambush somewhere where we have the advantage of good cover or high ground.
A lot will depend on how much time we have to prepare. Pearlie's supposed to meet with Joey tonight to see if he's heard anything definite about the time Kane plans to attack.
Cicero, in writing about the campaigns of the Roman army, made mention of the fact that the best defense is a good offense. We had good luck once before when faced with a similar situation, by attacking the gunmen while they were still in Fontana.
That is un bueno plan, Señor Longmont. That way the banditos will not be ready for the fight, which will give us an advantage.
It'll also help keep the ranch safe. No telling how many head of cattle and fences and things you'll lose if the battle takes place on the Sugarloaf.
Smoke looked at Monte Carson.
We had a few more men last time we took on Fontana. Do you think nine of us is enough to do the deed, Monte?
Better nine against 50 when they're not expecting us and fighting in a town where there's plenty of cover than trying to outfight them on horseback on the plains.
Yeah, Smoke. If we can do it late in the night and catch them whilst they're asleep, they're liable to be shooting each other in all the confusion while we'll know where each other is.
What you mean, we, Cal? You ain't in no shape for another fracas just yet.
Just try and stop me, Pearlie. I ain't about to miss a chance to get back at those men who shot me.
Here's what I propose. There's a hill overlooking Fontana, just to the south. I'll sneak up there and make a sketch of the town. When Pearlie meets with Joey, we'll have him try to find out where most of the gang is bunking down. Then we'll make a plan of attack to make the most out of the element of surprise.
With any luck, we'll be able to take out a significant portion of the gang with our initial attack, which will help even out the odds quite a bit.
What if Pearlie is unable to talk to Joey? Perhaps Al and me might go into the town and find out what you want to know?
No, Lewis, but thanks. That'd be much too dangerous. I suspect the nearer Kane gets to the attack, the more suspicious of strangers he'll be. And we can't afford to lose your guns before the battle. We'll just have to hope Pearlie can meet with Joey and find out where the gang is staying in the town and the date of the attack.
That night, Pearlie arrived at the place where he was supposed to meet with Joey and built a small fire. He made a pot of coffee and huddled there in the chilly blackness, waiting. In Fontana, Joey eased out of his bed and began to slip his trousers on. As he glanced out of a window, he noticed a flare of light across the street from the hotel, followed by an intermittent glowing red spot. He sat on the edge of his bed and thought for a few minutes. He really didn't have any news for Smoke, so risking his place with the outlaws just to have a meeting was foolish. He finally decided to go back to sleep and give it one more day trying to find out the date of the attack. By 5 o'clock in the morning, Pearlie gave up any hope of seeing Joey. He kicked dirt over the smoldering coals of his fire and climbed wearily on cold and began the long ride back to the Sugarloaf, hoping nothing had happened to his friend. At breakfast the next morning, Joey decided to force the issue with Lazarus. He finished his eggs and sausage, wiped his mouth on his sleeve, and stood up from the table. Sauntering over to where Lazarus was sitting at his corner table with Blackie Jackson and Curly Joe Ventrilo, Joey flipped a $20 gold piece onto the middle of the table.
Now, what's that for, Joey?
For my room and board for the past week. I figured that about cover it.
What do you mean?
I'm leaving. I'm bored sitting around here doing nothing all day with no prospects of any action in the near future.
Well, now, hey, I told you it won't be long. Now, settle down and be patient.
That ain't all of it, Kane. I ain't used to being treated like a hired hand, not being told what's going on and expected to sit around waiting for my orders. I don't much like it.
Blackie Jackson glared at Joey.
Who cares what you like and don't like, Wells? You wait for Mr. Kane's orders and do like he says, just like everybody else.
Joey slowly turned his head to stare into Jackson's eyes. his gaze deadly as a rattler's just before it strikes.
I don't recall addressing your boy, Kane. But you better tell him before he anties up in his hand. He'd best have enough chips to back up his big mouth.
As he finished talking, Joey straightened up and loosed the hammer thong on his Colt. He turned to face Jackson, his hands hanging limp at his sides, his eyes flat and cold.
You want to try and give me some more orders, boy?
Blackie's face blanched white, and sweat began to bead on his forehead in spite of the coolness of the morning. He licked suddenly dry lips and glanced at Kane, his eyes begging for help.
Men, take it easy. There's no need for this. Sit down, Joey, and I'll tell you what you want to know.
Joey relaxed, the stiffness going out of his muscles and a small grin turning up the corners of his mouth. He turned away from Blackie, showing his contempt for the man and his manner.
So what the hell's going on? We going after Smoke Jensen or sit here until winter comes?
Give me 2 more days, Joey. I'm expecting the last wagon load of supplies in today or tomorrow. It's got the gunpowder for my cannons and enough ammunition to start our own war.
But after we kill Jensen, what are your plans then?
Well, I told you, we'll make a run on Big Rock and shoot it to hell. Even if we don't destroy the town, we'll cause so much confusion no one will even notice that Jensen's ranch has been taken over. By the time anyone gets onto us, we'll all be rich from the gold we take out of his land.
I must say, I do like the sound of that word, rich, Kane. Now I'll stick around for 2 more days.
Oh, good, Joey. You won't regret it.
Two of Kane's men riding sentry duty crested a small hill south of town. Mario Lopez, a man on the run from the federales in Mexico for murder, rape, and cattle theft, noticed a glint of sun on metal just off to his left.
Hey, Johnny, you see that?
His riding partner, Johnny Crow, a half-breed Mescalero Apache, glanced over at him. Johnny's eyes were red-rimmed and swollen, showing he'd had a rough night the night before, as he did most nights, drinking enough whiskey for any 2 men.
No, what'd you see?
Sunlight reflecting off metal, right over there.
It's probably nothing.
The engine figured he must have gotten some bad whiskey, because he'd never had a hangover like this one before.
Well, let's go see, muchacho.
As they crested the ridge, Mario saw something he could not understand. A tall man wearing buckskins was standing before a wooden framework, drawing on a large sheet of paper. He rode over to him, Johnny following.
Hey, mister! What you doing?
Smoke Jensen looked up, showing no apparent concern at being seen.
Why, I'm drawing a sketch of Fontana.
You what?
Drawing a picture of Fontana. Would you like to see it?
Why you do that?
Smoke put his charcoal pencil down and turned to face the 2 men on horseback. A smile on his lips.
Because there's a bunch of lowlifes staying in the town. And some friends of mine and me are going to ride in there soon and kill them.
Mario's eyes widened and he jerked at his pistol. But before he got his gun halfway out of his holster, Smoke's hand appeared in front of him, filled with iron. After a couple of extra seconds, Johnny managed to get his gun clear of its holster, but he never managed to raise the barrel.
That's 2 we don't have to worry about when we come calling.
Smoke gathered up his easel and drawn and packed him on Joker. After he was packed and ready to leave, he arranged the 2 bodies facing each other about 3 feet apart. He took a deck of cards from his saddlebag and scattered it between the 2 men, along with a few dollars he found in their pockets. Joey was back at the bar having a beer when one of the outlaws burst through the bat wing. It was Boots Hemphill, so-called because he wore expensive knee-high leather boots, which he spent hours each day keeping shiny.
Boss, Mr. Kane, it's Johnny and Mario. I found them dead off to the south.
Lazarus got quickly to his feet, motioning Blackie and Curly Joe to follow him as he went to the door.
Mind if I tag along?
Suit yourself.
It took him about 30 minutes to find the bodies, laid out as Smoke had left them. Lazarus got down off his horse and walked over to stand before him.
It appears the fools were playing poker, and one of the other got angry.
Joey looked at the bodies and noticed something. but he kept his mouth shut. He knew it hadn't happened as Lazarus figured. The man named Mario was holding his pistol all right, but the hammer was still eared back. If he'd shot the half-breed, his gun wouldn't be cocked. Joey had to turn his head to hide his smile. He recognized Smoke Jensen's handiwork. Two bullets perfectly placed. Two dead men who probably hadn't even gotten off a shot. He hoped Kane wouldn't think to check their pistols to see if they'd been fired. And Lazarus didn't. The men were low on his list of assets, so he just got on his horse and started to ride off.
Yeah. What about the bodies, Mr. Kane?
Take what you want and leave them for the buzzards and wolves. Serves the bastards right for playing cards while they were supposed to be on guard duty.
That evening, just after supper, Joey knocked back a glass of whiskey and then started to walk out of the saloon.
Where are you going, Joey?
Over to the hotel. It's been a long day. I think I'll turn in early tonight.
Yeah, you do that. We got a big day tomorrow if that shipment gets here.
Joey nodded and touched the brim of his hat as he walked to his room. Lazarus spoke over his shoulder to Blackie.
Have one of the boys watch him. I still got a funny feeling about Mr. Joey Wells.
Joey gathered his few possessions together into his saddlebags, then threw them over his shoulder and slipped from his hotel room. Trying to stay close to buildings in shadows and out of the moonlight, he made his way to the livery stable. He put a saddle on Red and cinched it down tight, slipped the saddlebags behind the saddle, and began to lead the big stud toward the door.
Just where you think you're going, Wells?
Thought I'd take a ride in the moonlight.
Moots Hemphill walked out into the meager light streaming through a nearby window.
Mr. Kane told me to keep an eye on you. Guess it's a good thing he did.
Joey's eyes fell to the Colt that Hemphill was holding in his right hand.
Come on, let's go see what he has to say about your little moonlight ride.
All right, just let me get my saddlebags.
Joey turned and made to reach for the bags, but he let his hand fall to his waist and grabbed the handle of his Arkansas toothpick. As he pulled the saddlebags off Red, he made a quick backhand motion. Joey wiped the knife on Boots' shirt, then slipped it back in his scabbard. Figuring he might need the edge of a little getaway time, Joey bent over and grabbed Boots under the armpits and dragged him to a pile of hay in the corner of the livery. Afterward, he used his boot to spread dirt over the thick pool of blood where the body had fallen, covering up all traces of the fight. He led Red out the door of the livery and closed it behind him. As he climbed in the saddle, Joey thought about the man he just killed.
Man should always know his own limitations.
He leaned forward in the saddle and urged the stud on, racing for the Sugarloaf to tell Smoke of the impending attack the next day. He hoped Al and Luis had made it, because they were going to need all the guns they could find to hold off Kane and his gang. Cal had insisted on riding with Pearly out to where he was supposed to meet Joey, vowing if their old friend didn't show up tonight, he was going to ride into Fontana to make sure he was all right. Pearly just shook his head.
You can't do that, boy. You wouldn't make it 10 yards inside the town limits before you'd be blown clear out of your saddle.
Well, I know, but that's what I want to do.
Pearly reined his horse to a stop next to the boulder.
Here, use up some of that energy making us a fire. Gonna get plumb cold tonight for long.
After Cal had the fire going and a pot of coffee cooking next to it, he settled down.
You remember that story Al and Louie told us about how they met Smoke?
Sure. It was just after Lee Slater and his gang shot up Big Rock and some of the bullets hit Miss Sally.
Yeah, they signed on to fight with Slater against Smoke and his friends.
That's when they had that big shootout at the town of Rio.
Leaning back against his saddle, his hands behind his head, Pearly stared at the stars and thought about what it must have been like and how much the next few days were going to be like it when they attacked Lazarus Kane in Fontana.
I can see why they both came so fast when Joey wired them Smoke needed help. He let them live when most men would have shot them down or at least put them in jail.
Well, that's why Smoke is so many good friends. He don't judge a man as bad by his reputation, only by how he is to Smoke. if it's someone don't do them no harm, then Smoke just as soon let them be.
Sounds like someone's coming up in a hurry. Better be ready for trouble, Cal.
Cal pulled his pistol, and the men went to peer around the boulder, trying to make out who was approaching in the darkness.
Yo, Cam!
Come on in, Joey.
Pearly walked over to the fire and poured a fresh cup of coffee and handed it to Joey as he jumped down off Red.
Thanks. It's getting a mite chilly out there in the plain between town and here.
That's because there's nothing to break the wind coming down off in the peaks off the mountains over yonder.
Did you learn when Kane's planning on attacking the Sugar Loaf?
Yeah, tomorrow or the next day. He's waiting for a wagon load of dynamite and gunpowder and ammunition to come. Then he's going to make his play.
That don't give us much time.
You got that right, boy.
You headed back to Fontana?
Nope. Done burnt my bridges there, boys. Kane must have suspected something because he had me followed to make sure I didn't leave town.
How'd you get away?
Joey patted his Arkansas toothpick.
I just showed the man my blade, up close like. Then I got on Red and rode on out.
You need to rest, or can we head for the Sugar Loaf now?
Nah, I'm all right. Red's easy gated. Riding him's like sitting on a porch on a rocking chair. The Shagger mounts, boys. We're burning time, and we ain't exactly got a surplus of it to waste.
By the way, Al Martin and Louis Carbone arrived the other day.
Good. They once said if Smoke ever needed them, they'd come running. But you never know if someone will really do it till you ask them.
Well, I don't think they thought twice about it. From the way they talked, they got on a train same day they got your wire.
It'd be good to see him again. Now let's quit jawing and ride.
Lazarus Kane was enjoying his breakfast in the Dog Hole Saloon until Blackie Jackson approached his table.
I can tell by the look on your face you got bad news for me.
That's right, boss. I just got back from the hotel. Wills' room is empty. He must have cleared out during the night.
What about Boots Hemphill? He was supposed to be watching Joey. Where's he?
Before Jackson could answer, Lazarus pointed a finger at him.
If the bastard fell asleep and let Joey walk out of town, I'll crucify him.
Well, Hemphill's missing too, Lazarus. I can't find hide nor hair of him anywhere.
Listen up, everybody. I want all of you to comb the town. Boots Hemphill is missing, and so is Joey Wells. I don't have to tell you how much harder our job is going to be if somebody tips Jensen off that we're coming after him. Now get looking. Blackie, did you look in Hemphill's hotel room?
Yep. All his clothes and saddlebags and gear is still there. If he left following Wells or with him, he left all his belongings behind.
Lazarus rubbed his beard stubble for a minute, thinking.
Well, that's an idea. I want you to go check out the livery, see if Hemphill's horse is still there. Seems there are only three possibilities of what happened.
Well, what are those, boss?
If Hemphill's horse is gone, it means he's gone, either as Wells' partner or following him like I asked. If Hemphill's horse is still there, then he's in town someplace, and we need to find him and ask why he didn't stop Wells from leaving.
Yes, sir.
After Blackie left, heading for the livery, Lazarus threw his coffee cup across the room in frustration. Nothing, absolutely nothing was going right on this job. First, the wagon with the extra dynamite and ammunition was late in arriving, and now one of his best men had disappeared, either to warn Jensen or just because he got impatient and wanted to be elsewhere. Lazarus knew it was crucial to his plans to find out why Joey had left. It would make a big difference in how he approached Jensen's ranch if he knew they were coming. He walked over to the bar and poured himself a tall whiskey. To hell with coffee. The way things were going, he needed something more substantial in his gut. Blackie was back in less than an hour, the scowl on his face showing Lazarus the news was not going to be good.
Well, is Hemphill's horse in the stable?
Yeah, and so is Boots.
What do you mean, so is Boots? Why didn't you bring him with you?
Because I didn't want to drag him the whole way over here, that's why.
You mean he's dead?
Deader than the cow that made his boots.
How?
Looks like he took a knife, a big knife, in the throat. He was hid in the hay, and I'd never found him except the ground was muddy from all the blood he spilt.
Oh, damn. That means he must have caught Joey trying to leave, and Joey killed him.
Well, most likely the way it went down, all right.
If Joey wanted to leave bad enough to kill, to get out quietly, he must be planning to tell Jensen what's going on.
I'd bet my horse on it.
Call them in together. We've got to get moving before Jensen has time to plan a defense against us. Even if Joey warns him this morning, it'll take him a few days to round up enough men to cause us any problems. If we get the ammunition wagon today, we can hit him tonight.
Blackie had the entire gang assembled in the saloon within 30 minutes. Lazarus had him sit at the tables while he stood at the bar addressing him. He looked out over the crowd, thinking about the men he'd gotten involved in this. At one table sat seven men, all bank robbers and members of assorted gangs that read like a most wanted list. The leader of this particular group was Three Finger Sammy Torres. He was tall, over 6 foot, a Mexican with a large mustache and smallpox scars on his face. It was said he'd lost the 2 fingers of his left hand in a fight when his opponent bit him off. Torres reportedly made the man swallow him, then he cut his throat and gut and reclaimed the digits. He carried the mummified fingers in a small leather pouch, hung on a strip of rawhide around his neck. Two of his confederates, Dick Wheeler and Billy Bow, were said to have ridden with the James gang until Jesse got mad because they made eyes at his wife. It was a testament to their toughness that he didn't kill and allowed them to leave the gang. The remaining 4 men were from the Dalton gang. Having survived the shootout that broke up the gang in Coffeyville, Kansas, they'd headed north and joined up with Lazarus. They went by Jimmy Lake, Jake, Sonny, and Clyde. He didn't know their last names, and he didn't much care, as long as they did what they were supposed to. At the table next to him were 4 Mexicans in dirty clothes. They'd come from somewhere down near Del Rio. They were called Pedro Gonzalez, Jamie Sanchez, Coronado Valentine, and Pero Gutierrez. He hadn't asked how the man got the name Pero, which meant dog in English. They'd ridden with a local bandito on the Mexican border who'd just recently been strung up by the Texas Rangers, who they said had followed him over halfway here before heading back to Texas. The Mexes rarely bathed, and the other men didn't much like him in the saloon, saying the smell ruined their appetites. Of course, it didn't seem to do much to lessen their thirst for whiskey. The Mexicans would be good cannon fodder if needed. He'd have them rush the ranch first to see how well defended it was. Behind the Mexes were the Rebels, as they called themselves, ex-Confederate soldiers. They still wore the tattered remains of their uniforms as if it made any damn difference at this late date. Bobby Barlow, Christopher Tucker, Riley Samuels, Danny Donahue, and Willie Bodine were all from some backwoods place in Arkansas named Dog Snot or some such hillbilly name. They weren't very intelligent, but hell, Lazarus didn't plan on letting them do any thinking anyway. As long as they could ride and shoot and didn't turn yellow on him, he figured they'd do all right. There were a couple of black men in the group as well. Ordinarily, Lazarus didn't have much use for men of darker color, but he figured they'd be useful this time, especially if there was much digging to be done for the gold. Lazarus thought that Negroes were good at digging. Now, whether they lasted until time came to divvy up the proceeds was another matter entirely. Bartholomew Winter and Jedediah Jones were full-on black, and they rode with a man with a heavy reputation named Cherokee Bill, a half-black and half-Injun who'd been terrorizing the ranches up near the Injun Nations for some time now. They joined up because the U.S. Marshals had finally gotten around to trying to roust them out of their mountain hideouts up there. Cherokee Bill said they planned to stay around until the Marshals went back to Oklahoma Territory. Then they'd head back to the Nations. That is, Lazarus thought, if he decided to let them live that long. At least they seemed to know their place. Never tried to sit with the white folks in the saloon. Lazarus continued to review the men under his command in this manner for a few more minutes. Then he decided the time had come.
Men, there's a good chance we'll be riding on the Jensen Ranch in the next day or so. I want you to go easy on the whiskey until this is over. All right now, I realize temperance is something none of you are exactly used to. But know this. If any of you mess up because you're drunk or hungover, I'll personally put a bullet in your gut and leave you to rot to death on the trail. Have I made myself perfectly clear? Jimmy, I want you and Jake and Sonny and Clyde to get to work putting fuses in the dynamite we've got stacked over there at the store. I know you Dalton riders like to use explosives in your bank jobs, so I figure you're the ones who'd be the best at getting it ready to use.
No problem, boss. We get on it first thing in the morning.
No, Jimmy. You'll get on it right now, as soon as I'm through talking. I want the rest of you to get on over to the store and pick up as many boxes of shells for your guns as you think you'll need. Put them in your saddlebags and have them ready to travel by tomorrow. When it comes time to leave, I want everything and everybody ready to go.
Why the sudden rush, Kane? We've been sitting around here for 2 weeks or more, and now you act like there's a fire in your britches.
We may have a slight problem. Joey Wells took off last night. I fear he may have gone to warn Jensen we're coming.
As they all looked around at each other, Lazarus could see the fear this caused in some of the men.
You mean we might not just be fighting Smoke Jensen? One of the toughest hombres in the area, but we may also have to go up against Joey Wells? The toughest hombre anywhere?
That's right, Curly Joe. You got a problem with that?
Not particularly. It will no doubt mean there will be less men left sharing the loot after we kill him.
Well, there is that to consider. Now, you men get on over to the store and pick up your bullets and dynamite like I told you.
Kane turned to Bob Blanchard.
Bob, the bar's closed for the rest of the day.
Lazarus ignored the groan from his men as he walked over to his table, signaling his leaders to join him. After the others had left, he looked around at Blackie Jackson, Tom Cartwright, Curly Joe, Pig Iron Carlton, Jeremy Brett, and King Johansson.
Men, we are going to stick together through all this. Let the other fools take the front of the charge and do the dangerous work. We'll hang back and finish off any survivors at the ranch after the others have broken through the defenses.
Jeremy Brett frowned.
I say, Lazarus, that doesn't sound very sporting.
I don't think you realize who we're dealing with here, Jeremy. Wells and Jensen are two of the best men with guns we could pick to go up against. I only put our odds of beating them, even with a 10-to-1 advantage in numbers, at about 50-50. If for some reason they turn out to be too tough for this bunch, I want us to survive to fight another day.
Well, you're the boss, boss. But I want a piece of Joey Wells. I don't like traitors.
For that, my friend, you're gonna have to stand in line.
Did you mean it, Lazarus? About the bar being closed the rest of the day?
Not for us, boys. Only for the cannon fodder.
Tom, behind the deuces, Cartwright, got to his feet and ambled on over to the bar.
Bob, give me that bottle of Kentucky bourbon over there and some clean glasses. We got a little more drinking to do before the day's over.
Blanchard looked over at Lazarus and saw him nod. He handed Cartwright the bottle and glasses. After he filled everyone's glass, Lazarus stood up and held his glass high.
Boys, a toast to gold and all the things it can buy.
After Lazarus and his men finished their drinks, he sent them after the others to make ready for the attack on Smoke Jensen's ranch. He walked over to the bar and held out his glass for a refill. Bob Blanchard poured more whiskey into the glass, a worried look on his face.
What is it, Bob? You look like you got something on your mind.
There's something I ought to tell you, Mr. Kane. After all, you've been awful good to me, paying me for the whiskey and food and such your men are using.
Well, go on, Bob. I'm listening.
And I couldn't help but overhear you talking to your men just now about going on down the road and trying something else if the attack on Smoke Jensen don't work out.
Yeah, so what?
How much do you really know about Smoke Jensen, Mr. Kane?
Just what everybody else does. That he's a famous shootist, an ex-outlaw, and a mighty tough hombre.
You don't know near enough, then. See, Jensen's an old mountain man, trained by the most famous mountain man of all, Preacher.
Well, so what? We ain't gonna be fighting him up in the mountains, Bob.
Well, that's not it, Mr. Kane. The mountain men lived by a code of vengeance. Once you done one of them wrong, he'd never give up till he repaid you. Double.
I don't see what...
I'm just telling you this so you won't think you're going to be able to ride away from this after it's over, if Jensen is still alive.
Blanchard took down a glass and poured himself a drink and then refilled Lazarus's.
Let me tell you a story about what happened to the men who killed Smoke's dad just after they got here to Colorado. Smoke's dad, Emmett, came back from the war between the states in the summer of 1865. Smoke, who's known as Kirby then, was only about 14 or 15 years old. Emmett sold their scratch dirt farm in Missouri, packed up their belongings, and they headed north by northwest. Long about Wichita, they met up with an old mountain man who called himself Preacher. For some reason, unknown even to the old-timer, he took them under his wing when he saw they was as green as new apples, and they traveled together for a spell. Soon, they was set upon by a band of Pawnee Indians, and Smoke killed his first couple of men. The story goes that Preacher couldn't hardly believe it when he saw him draw that old Navy Colt. Says he knew right off the boy was destined to become a legend, if he lived long enough, that is. That's when Preacher gave young Kirby Jensen his nickname, Smoke, from the smoke that came out of the Navy Colt and from the color of his hair. Right after that, Emmett told Preacher that he had set out looking for three men who killed Smoke's brother and stole some Confederate gold. Their names were Wiley Potter, Josh Richards, and Stratton. I don't remember his first name. Emmett went on to tell Preacher that he was going gunning for those polecats, and if he didn't come back, he wanted Preacher to take care of Smoke till he was growed up enough to do it for himself. Preacher told Emmett he'd be proud to do that very thing. The next day, Emmett took off and left the old cougar to watch after his young'un. They didn't hear nothing for a couple years. Time Preacher spent teaching the young buck the ways of the West and how to survive where most men wouldn't. Preacher later told people that during that time, though Smoke was about as natural a fast drawing shot as he'd ever seen, the boy spent at least an hour every day drawing and dry firing those Navy Colts he wore. About 2 years later, at Brown's Hole in Idaho, an old mountain man found Smoke and Preacher and told Smoke his daddy was dead and that those men he was after killed him. Smoke packed up and he and Preacher went on the prod. They got to Pagosa Springs, that's Indian for healing waters, just west of the Needle Mountains, and stopped to replenish their supplies. Then they rode through Rico, a rough-and-tumble mining camp that back then was an outlaw hangout.
Blanchard halted in his tail to build himself a cigarette and stick it in his mouth. Then he continued telling Lazarus about the legend of Smoke Jensen's early years. Kirby and Preacher dismounted in front of the Trading Post saloon. As was his custom, Kirby slipped the thongs from the hammers of his colts at dismounting. They bought their supplies and were about to leave when two rough-dressed and unshaven men, both wearing guns, walked in and blocked the door.
Who owns that horse out there? The one with an SJ brand.
Kirby laid his purchases on the counter.
I do.
Which way'd you ride in from?
Preacher had slipped to the right, his left hand covering the hammer of his Henry, concealing the click as he thumbed it back. Kirby faced the man, his right hand hanging loose by his side. His left hand was just inches from his left-hand gun.
Who wants to know and why?
Pike's my name, and I say you come through my diggings yesterday and stole my dust.
And I say you're a liar.
Why, you little pup, I'll shoot your ears off.
Why don't you try? I'm tired of hearing you shoot your mouth off.
I think I'll just kill you for that.
Pike and his partner reached for their guns. Pike, with two holes in his chest, died with his back to a support pole, his eyes still open, unbelieving. Neither had managed to pull a pistol more than halfway out of leather.
Good God! I never even seen the draw!
Preacher had the muzzle of his Henry to cover the men at the tables. The bartender put his hand slowly on the bar, indicating that he wanted no trouble.
We'll be leaving now.
Kirby holstered his Colts and picked up his purchases from the counter. He walked out the door.
What are we supposed to do with the bodies?
Bury them.
What's that kid's name?
Smoke.
A few days later, in a nearby town, a friend of Preacher's told Smoke that two men, Haywood and Thompson, who claimed to be Pike's brother, had tracked him and Preacher and were in town waiting for Smoke. Smoke walked down the rutted street an hour before sunset, the sun at his back, the way he had planned. Thompson and Haywood were in the big tent at the end of the street, which served as saloon and cafe. Preacher had pointed him out earlier and asked if Smoke needed his help. Smoke said no. The refusal came as no surprise. As he walked down the street, a man glanced up and spotted him, then hurried quickly inside. Smoke felt no animosity toward the men in the tent saloon. No anger, no hatred. But they came here after him, so let the dance begin. The word had swept through the makeshift town, and from behind cabin walls, trees, and boulders, the people watched as Smoke stopped about 50 feet from the tent.
Haywood! Thompson! You want to see me? Then step out and see me!
The two men pushed back the tent flap and stepped out, both of them angling to get a better look at the man they had tracked.
You the kid called Smoke?
I am.
With instinct born into a natural fighter, Smoke knew this would be no contest. Both men carried their guns tucked behind wide leather belts, an awkward position from which to draw, for one must first pull the hand up, then over, grabbing the pistol, cocking it as it's pulled from behind the belt, then leveling it to fire. It's also a dandy way to shoot oneself in the belly or side.
Pike was my brother.
And Shorty was my pal.
You should choose your friends more carefully.
They was just funning with you.
You weren't there. You don't know what happened.
You calling me a liar?
If that's the way you want to take it.
Thompson's hand moved closer to the .44 in his belt.
Take that back or make your play.
There's no need for this.
You're a damn thief. You stole their gold and then killed them.
Smoke, who had spent hundreds of hours practicing his deadly skills, thought that they were doing everything wrong. These men weren't gun hands. He could smell the fear sweat from the men.
I don't want to have to kill you.
That's because you're yellow.
Haywood grabbed for his gun.
Haywood! You bastard, you shot my gun!
Haywood dropped to the dirt, dying. As the angel of death began to enfold him in her cold, dark embrace, he had a vision of Thompson spinning in the street. Then he died. Thompson was on one knee, his left hand holding his shattered right elbow. His leg was bloody. Smoke had knocked his gun from his hand, then shot him in the leg on the way down.
Pike was your brother, so I understand why you came after me. But you were wrong. I'll let you live, but stay with mining. If I ever see you again, I'll kill you.
The young man turned, putting his back to the dead and bloody. He walked slowly up the street, his high-heeled Spanish riding boots pocking the air with dusty puddles. Lazarus stopped Blanchard's story long enough to pull a cigar out of his pocket, light it, and get his glass refilled.
How old was Jensen when this happened?
I don't know exactly. About 18 or so, I guess.
Go on, Bob.
After Smoke shot and killed Pike, his friend, and Haywood, and then wounded Pike's brother Thompson, he and Preacher went after the other men who killed Smoke's brother and stole the Confederate gold. They rode on over to La Plaza de los Leones, the Plaza of the Lions. It was there that they trapped a man named Casey in a lion shack with some of his compadres. Smoke and Preacher burned him out and captured Casey. Smoke took him to the outskirts of the town and hanged him.
Just hanged him? Without a trial or notifying the authorities?
Yes, sir. Smoke likes to take care of his enemies himself. Well, I bet that even if he knows you and your men are coming after him, he won't ask nobody else for any help. Anyway, Jensen knew that town had never hanged one of their own just on the word of Smoke Jensen. Like as not, they'd have hanged Smoke and Preacher instead. Anyway, after that, the sheriff of that town put out a flyer on Smoke, accusing him of murder. Had a $10,000 reward on it, too.
Did Smoke and Preacher go into hiding?
Nope. Seems Preacher advised it, but Smoke said he had one more call to make. They rode on over to Oradelphia, looking for a man named Ackerman. They didn't go after him right at first. Smoke and Preacher sat around doing a whole lot of nothing for 2 or 3 days. Smoke wanted Ackerman to get plenty nervous. He did, and finally came gunning for Smoke with a bunch of men who rode for his brand.
At the edge of town, Ackerman, One bull of a man with small, mean eyes and a cruel slit for a mouth slowed his horse to a walk. Ackerman and his hands rode down the street, six abreast. Preacher and Smoke were on their feet. Both men slipped the thongs from the hammers of the Colts. Preacher wore two Colts, 44s, one in a holster, the other stuck behind his belt. Mountain Man and young gunfighter stood 6 feet apart on the boardwalk. Ackerman and his men wheeled their horses to face the men on the boardwalk.
I hear tell you boys is looking for me. If so, here I am.
News to me. What's your name?
You know who I am, kid. Ackerman.
Oh, yeah. You're the man who helped kill my brother by shooting him in the back. Then you stole the gold he was guarding.
You're a liar. I didn't shoot your brother. That was Potter and his bunch.
You stood and watched it. Then you stole the gold.
It was war, kid.
But you were on the same side. So that not only makes you a killer, it makes you a traitor and a coward.
I'll kill you for saying that.
You'll burn in hell a long time before I'm dead.
Smoke took the men on the left, Preacher the men on the right side. The battle lasted no more than 10 to 12 seconds. When the smoke and the noise had cleared, five men lay in the street, two of them dead. Two more would die from their wounds. One was shot in the side. He would live. Ackerman had been shot three times, once in the belly, once in the chest, and one ball had taken him in the side of the face. His corpse still sat in his saddle. The big man finally leaned to one side, toppled from his horse. One boot hung in the stirrup. The horse shied, then began walking down the dusty street, dragging Ackerman, leaving a bloody trail.